This is the Good Neighbor Podcast, the place where local businesses and neighbors come together. Here's your host, Mike Sedita.
Hello out there. Welcome to episode 93 of the Good Neighbor Podcast. I'm your host, Mike Sedita. And we have the pleasure today of being joined by Jason Avery. He is the owner of Avery Construction. Jason, how are you doing today?
I'm fantastic. I appreciate the invite, Mike.
Thank you so much for coming on. It's one of the things I like to talk about is building, because I have no skill set in building. So I like hearing people who do things in construction and tell us how it works type. I love the makeover shows, even though I'm terrible at it. So I want to get into some of that stuff with you. But before we do, let me just kind of fill you in on what the Good Neighbor Podcast is. So essentially in 2020, in the middle of COVID, when we all had to be socially distant, the Good Neighbor Podcast was started in Southwest Florida as a way for business owners like you, philanthropic groups, charities, to be able to let the community know what they were doing, to be their good neighbor. And in the past 3.5 years, we now have podcasts from South Florida to Tampa to Atlanta to Denver. We're all over the United States. And I'm fortunate enough to be the guy here in Tampa who gets to talk to business owners like you and hear their stories. So tell us a little bit about your business or businesses.
Sure. I got into the home improvement industry in my early 20s, and I worked for corporate America, multi-million dollars around the state. And about 12 and a half years ago, I decided to take that leap of faith, and I launched a business with three guys doing labor and a bookkeeper working one day a week. That's all it took. It didn't have many numbers to count at that point in business. But since then, 12 and a half years later, we got a team of 45 guys doing remodels all around the greater Tampa Bay area, kitchens, bathrooms, room additions. And as I've positioned myself to work on it versus in it, I have gone on to start a couple other businesses. So Designer Cabinets LLC is a factory in Clearwater. It wholesales to contractors like myself. And then Constructing Success is a coaching and mentoring company where I'm teaching some of the younger general contractors how to do what I'm doing. That all stemmed off the basis of my book that I wrote 6 years ago. I got a number one bestseller all about customer service and how to maintain relationships over time.
And the course is Contractor Success, you said?
Constructing Success.
Constructing Success. Sorry.
Yeah, it's the blueprints for a referral-based business. There's a website for that company as well, construct-success.com, where people can learn more. But I've always had a passion for helping others grow, and not just contractors trying to grow, but also business entrepreneurs. A lot of people are good at their trade or their craft and know very little about building relationships with people.
Well, that's kind of an ancillary effect of what we do with the podcast. So part of this is so people can learn about what you do as far as your business. But business podcasts like this is a lot of entrepreneurs and business owners that are listening to it saying, like, what did he do 12 years ago? And I'm assuming that was right around the real estate crash that was going on that you needed to regroup. Was that kind of the effect of that?
Actually, no, but the real estate crash is what made me decide that this was the industry for me. I was working for others at the time. And what I found was that new construction had completely died on the vine when things got a little tough. But the remodeling space actually held true. It was a little bit recession resilient. The people who were, stuck in their home, couldn't, get out of it, decided,
upside
hey,
down.
Yep. While, let's fix it up. And the client that I've catered to, I've narrowed my target market to cater to, is that, elite high-end client.
Well, the other part of it, too, it's kind of I don't want to say ironic, because it's actually just happened again. I mean, during COVID, it was almost the same exact thing. Like, people were trapped in their house, and rather than moving and going anywhere else, they're like, well, we're trapped here for the next couple months. Why don't we add a kitchen or remodel this or do that? And now it's happening again with the interest rate going up, where I talk to people all day long that are like, look, I have a 3% mortgage on my house. I would rather stay here and fix it up than go and pay 7% interest. So there's a lot of that going on. So, I mean, great foresight for you to be able to see that when that happened. And it's kind of happened a couple times over since then. So that's fantastic.
Yeah, inflation is definitely real out there. We've seen it in the materials. When you mentioned the COVID time, it was the DIY projects. Everybody, yeah. All those do-it-yourselfers. Again, some of my clients did put some money on the sidelines for a little bit, and they had to see what was going to happen in their own business, how it was going to be impacted by COVID, inflation, et cetera. So it's definitely proven to be you know, opportunistic. There's plenty of opportunity in remodeling.
So you touched on it a little bit when you started to get into your background, but like when you were a young guy growing up, were you always handy? Were you always the guy that could fix stuff? Like me, I was always like a numbers guy. I was always a finance, math. I always liked that. Building stuff was not my forte. Although I will say it is. I don't want you to get envious of this, but I did build a drop leaf table in 1988 in wood shop, and it is still sitting in my living room. It's a TV stand now because I have a bachelor pad. It's just me. I can't afford really fancy furniture. So my drop leaf table from wood shop in New Jersey in 1988 is still holding up today. So I don't know if you build construction stuff like that, Jason. If you do, then you guys are in good shape.
I'll tell you a little secret about me. So when I was young, I'd go, knock on the neighbor's door and say, hey, you want me to mow your lawn for $20? And they'd say, yeah, go out there and mow the lawn. After the first day of sweating to death out there mowing the lawn, I decided I didn't like sweating and heavy labor. So I sold him the next week's job, and then I had my buddy Josh come do it for $15. So while he was mowing the lawn and sweating, I was knocking on the next neighbor's doors and lining up the next job. So
you're more of an entrepreneur and a businessman than necessarily the guy out there doing the work.
I like to surround myself with talented people, more talented than myself, and assemble winning teams, give them the resources and the process and the system they need to go succeed.
You know, it's funny is I literally was just posting something about this. I've built two multi-million dollar ad agencies from scratch, one with a partner, one on my own. And having the right team around you, doing the things that you don't do well. And like first part of that as an entrepreneur is, hey, having the humility enough to say, I know what I do well and I know what I don't do well. And then going and finding the right people that are able to say, hey, listen, I am going to work in conjunction with you and enhance what you do by being good at what I do. So that is vital. I mean, that is vital for business owners. I say it all the time to people I talk to. Do the things you're good at. Find the person who does the things you're not good at and bring them on and partner with them to do what's right. So what would you say from your perspective? I mean, obviously building the business is good, and you have obviously contractors that do the work. What other areas as a business owner, like from an accounting standpoint, a marketing standpoint, do you have other people that do all that stuff too?
Yeah, that it's like the spokes of a wheel. You got to have all your departments. So I have a couple of gentlemen to go out and help me do the design and estimating. It doesn't mean that they have to do it 100% on their own. I can come tag along when there's technicalities that need to be sorted through or where I really need to meet the client personally for them to feel comfortable. But then after it's sold, now there's a walkthrough handoff to the project management team. And there's another couple of guys assigned to running the crews and the teams in the field, quality control, collecting the money, calling in the inspections. There's another guy whose whole job is just the permitting side of it, and go get the plans submitted, deal with the counties, call in those inspections as they go. There's the accounting side of it, of course. I had that since day one. Remember, three guys doing labor and a bookkeeper.
Bookkeeper. Hey, listen, that's the title one right there, keeping the numbers straight.
Well, so a mentor of mine, Dr. Ivan Meisner, says, live in your flame, not in your wax. So I took that to heart a long time ago, and it's I can do accounting just as good as my accountant can, but if based on my behavioral style, if I had to sit in front of this computer staring at spreadsheets for hours, it's going to drain me. It's going to wipe me out. I'm ready for a nap. You can put me on stage and put on a show in front of 1,000 people in an auditorium. Some people would be wiped out by that. For me, that's just exhilarating. It charges me up. So knowing where you need to apply yourself in the business. Most trades guys are very good at the craft and know very little about business administration, about managing a P&L, about recruiting and training and incentivizing your new talent coming in, not turning them over because that's super expensive.
Yeah, attrition is a problem for sure.
How are you going to duplicate and replicate your system as it expands? Because when I used to do the estimates, I'm very good at predicting things that I've seen in my experience.
Right.
But when I bring a new 20 or 30 something year old onto the team who's got far less wisdom in this industry, how do I get him to budget and predict the cost accurately? So creating spreadsheets where it's just plug and play.
Yeah.
Punch in the numbers. If you can run a tape measure, you can operate the spreadsheet. Things of that nature that make it, simple to expand and grow and then manage the downline from that point.
Well, it's funny. So like I've been involved in advertising for the past 12, 13 years. But before that, I spent 20 years in corporate America. And my role, you know, my at the highest level was as an efficiency expert. Like my job was to go in and look at a process that now these were financial institutions and insurance operations centers and things like that, where I would look at their process and see process A through process M, watch people do motion studies, see what they were doing, task management, and then evaluating and saying, listen, if you take out steps F and G and I, you could still accomplish the same thing faster, less costly, et cetera. So my job was actually doing that for a period of time. So, and you know what the funny thing is I don't know, you know how like you say Beethoven could just sit down at a piano and play and he didn't need any of this instruction. It was just like natural to him. I don't know how I got good at doing that. I think it was born out of being kind of lazy, to be honest with you. I wanted to find shortcuts in how to do things. So I just became very good at it. And I did it for a long time. And companies paid me a good amount of money to go in and look at stuff and fix it and check their operation and things like that. But I hated my life. Like I would wake up in the morning and be like, I can't believe I got to put on this suit. And I can't believe I have to be clean shaven. And I can't believe I can't have tattoos. And my whole life was like this, like track. And then for me, the real estate crash, you know, the recession in 08 was actually like God intervening and saying, listen, this is not the life for you. You are better off being in front of people, talking to people, building businesses, helping businesses grow. This is what you're good at. And I kind of just got thrown into it and it's worked out really well. But yeah, it's amazing how we just have these skills and they just kind of evolve into being an expert and training people. Taking a process and making it portable to a new person is vital to scaling a business. I mean, it is essential. It's an essential piece of scaling your business, because if it takes you 6-8 months to train somebody and then they get another job in month 12, you're constantly on the loop. So training and retaining and all that stuff. I mean, it sounds like you have a system in place that has really helped your business explode.
You're drawing the quotes out of me today, but Elon Musk says, train them so that they have the ability to leave you and then treat them so that they won't want to.
And I hear he's pretty smart, that Elon Musk guy. I think he's got a couple good things going on. So you've already quoted. So I'm assuming you're a networking guy because you quoted Meisner, right? So you're a B&I guy. Tell me a little bit, because that's obviously not fun. That's actually network. I mean, it might be fun for you. It's not like it's not an extracurricular. When you're not running your businesses and operating, I mean, are you married? Do you have kids? What do you do for fun?
So yeah, married, and my wife and I raised 4 adult children. We actually already have 4 grandchildren with a 5th one on the way. But yeah, our passion's boating, and we have a pontoon boat. We're river rats, and I have learned that it's good to take your business and your fun lifestyle and figure out how to intertwine them. So when you go to work, you're kind of going to play. So if my role in my organization is the most important role I play is to find new revenue streams via reciprocal relationships. So an architect, I can give business to an architect all day long, and that architect can give business to me all day long. I mean, my mother likes to refer me jobs, but my mom's only exposed to them every so often.
Right.
An architect might have 30 projects on his desk right now. Interior designers the same way. I got lots of customers who need help picking out colors, and they have lots of customers that have a concept that needs to be built. So when I can identify the right people, meet them through networking or indirectly through introductions from people that I met at networking, then my job is to build and nurture that relationship. So as often as I can, I try to take my referral partners golfing, clay shooting, poker tournaments.
Your job sounds terrible. Your job sounds awful. I don't know how you manage to get through it every day. So do you find let me ask you this about your familial relationship. So is your wife, you guys have similar interests? I mean, like I know some significant others, one is very detail oriented and the other is kind of like when you guys get ready to go out, are like you waiting in the car while she's getting dressed and taking forever? How does that manage?
Have you been peeking in the window? We've come very clear on this. I actually teach, one of the classes I teach about relationships is all about behavior. It was based on the DISC assessment. So, you know, it's, how are we wired? And she and I are wired exactly the opposite. But that means that we each have, you know, strengths and areas where we can improve. And, you know, it's applying it in the right direction. So we're currently in the middle of launching our next new business, which is going to be a therapeutic spa. She's the licensed massage therapist.
Okay.
She's got the vision of what this place is going to, how it's going to look and feel. What's the culture of the place? I'm bringing the construction element, and then we'll help her on the P&L side and the growth model on how to, you know, manage the finance of it. And so, again, just applying our strengths where they're best used.
So where is this new location going to be? Is it in Pasco County? Is it out in Clearwater? Where are you guys going to set up shop? Because finding space in Wesley Chapel right now for anything is impossible.
So remodeling, that world of mine is all greater Tampa Bay, mostly Pinellas, Hillsborough, and the southern half of Pasco. But okay. We personally live in Hernando County in Brooksville. Okay. And so we bought a little piece of commercial real estate just outside of downtown Brooksville on Jefferson Street, right by Tom Vaughn Park. And it was a 9-month process of dealing with my county over the permit. And now we're trucking away with construction and looking forward to opening maybe in the beginning of November.
Good for you. That's awesome. And honestly, man, you do this for a living. In the overall scheme of things, 9 months is really not a bad timeline, no?
95% of what I do, I can do way, way faster. It's usually, though, mostly about tearing apart an existing house and putting an existing house back together.
Right.
Or taking a commercial space that's already up to commercial code and then updating it with new looks. In this particular world, we bought a residential place from the 1950s that's been rezoned commercial. And so the challenges became in the site work. You know, believe it or not, you got to dig a pond on the property to not your water drain off into the neighbor's property and et cetera, et cetera. So there's a lot of details that needed to
be sorted out. And is there different code because it's from 19? Like, I know, like, I'm from New Jersey. So whereas here in Florida, while it's one of our oldest states, New Jersey, there's a lot of historical sites. So it's not considered a historical site where you have certain code you have to adhere to, right?
I don't have to adhere to a historical board that I have to submit to. We do that often. There's a lot of 1920s and 30s homes right down in St. Petersburg that we can deal with in that respect. But up here, no, I don't have to deal historical, just a taking what was a house in the 50s, and now it's got to be up to full commercial code of the day. There's no exceptions. There's no grandfathering anything in. You have to update and improve.
Well, it's funny is I went and looked at a house, God, not this past summer, the summer before in St. Pete, and it was built in like 1927 or something like that. It was absolutely adorable. But like, you know, looking at your background, and I live in Wesley Chapel. I mean, if you're up in Brooksville, you have space. I'm just at a point in my life where I'm used to some of that space, and going back to that crammed city living, as cool as a historical building sounds, I know if I was in there, not only would I hate feeling crammed, but then on top of that, my neighbors on top of me, it would wear on me very, very. I mean, I already have neighbors close to me, but not like at that level. So is a job like something like that, I'm assuming it requires a little extra TLC, because not only are you in crammed quarters with equipment and things like that, there's got to be codes for times in construction, and there's got to be codes, like you said, for the historical stuff. So do you tend to like to take those jobs on because they probably pay a premium, or do you not want any part of it?
You know, I would prefer not. We are totally capable and happy to help people with them, but the reality is they do cost significantly more, because when you get to a home that old, if it's in the 20s, you probably got 2x4s that are actually 2 inches by 4 inches instead of 1.5 by 3.5 the way right. They're built today. You've got instead of regular drywall, you've either got slat wood with plaster over it or wire lath with plaster over it, right, depending on the age. But behind that stuff, you've also got
bed wiring.
You've got aluminum wiring, fire hazards. You might have an old fuse box versus a breaker, you know, panel. There's a lot of, you know, cast iron underneath it might be crumbling and falling apart in the drains. There's a lot of extracurricular work and just leveling the place. Nothing seems to be flat or level anymore because of settling, aging, wood rot, termites, you know, all kinds of things.
And the ground is shifting underneath it all the time. So basically something like that is I don't want to say a tear down, but you're basically the demo on a job like that is weeks to get it all down to where you need to be.
you might need a complete replumb, a complete new rewire, and all new air conditioning equipment, and you know, et cetera, because they didn't have air conditioning back then.
Right.
And so if they retrofitted it, it probably came under the floors instead of through the ceiling. And, you know, there's a lot of.
I mean, that is a massive undertaking. So, that's why I asked that question, because a lot of people, you know, people do good jobs, and like I watch these shows, like I said in the beginning. So like for me, I can't do any of the work, but I love watching car makeover shows, even though I'm not a mechanic. And I love watching some of these makeover shows, but not the dream house stuff. Like that stuff just to me is unrealistic. Like the stuff they do, it almost feels like it's Band-Aids and rubber bands and they're putting it together for the aesthetic of the show. But there is one or two of them. Like there's a guy, Homes on Homes, this guy, Mike Holmes up in Canada. He seems like whether it's for production value or not, he just seems like the stuff he does. If he tears something open, like you're saying, the 2x4s are actually 2x4s. He seems like the type of guy who says, listen, this is not code. We can't do this anymore. We got to rip the whole thing down. Like, I love watching that stuff because it's nice. A, it's not my project. I'm not living in a hotel. And B, it happens in an hour. So it's all completely done in 1 hour, even though that job probably took 6 months to do. From your standpoint, I would think one of the vital people on your team is your project managers, like shuffling all this stuff out. How many people you have doing stuff like that with a crew of 40?
Well, so there's 12 people that are crew leaders. Each crew leader is physically working on a job, and he has anywhere from 1 to 5 helpers. He might be working 2 or 3 projects with the additional help. And then I have a production manager and a project manager. So production manager is the guy who's got his finger on the big wheel, the big process and the flow of what's happening. And
when cement is coming in, when electrical's coming in, shuffling.
Right. Project manager, he's more that guy that's just doing all the running around. Day to day, he's stopping by 3 or 4 of our jobs. He's taking pictures. He's completing the reports about what is complete, what's going to happen next, what materials do we need, when's the next payment, when's the next inspection. And then all that gets communicated back up the hill to the rest of us who are managing from behind the scenes.
So what would you say is the biggest misconception that you run into, whether that is people don't realize how long it takes to get stuff done through the county, or they don't realize how much inflation has truly affected a quote that you gave them 3 months ago? Like, what is the biggest thing you run into where you have to come back to them and say, Mr. and Mrs. Homeowner or business owner, to do this job? Like, what's changed, or what are you educating them on when they're coming to you?
I think you nailed it. That goes down to valuation, the money. And there's, because people are having a hard time selling the home now, they're wanting to talk about adding on to it. I get a lot of requests for additions every single day. And a lot of people have an unrealistic expectation about what the value of an addition really is.
Right.
So just to paint a little bit of perspective around it, when you are building an entire house, and I know I have a friend who's a superintendent at a very respectable home builder in the area, and he says that they're getting a 400,000 square foot house built, and it's at a selling price just over $1.2 million. The cost to the retail consumer is about $312 per square foot on their average right now. A lot of people have it in their head like, oh, it should be 100, 150 a square foot. Maybe 10 years ago.
Right.
And that was still a builder grade package before you upgraded anything. And nobody wanted the carpet. They want the ceramic tile or the porcelain. You know, nobody wants the laminated cabinet. They want the hardwood or the granite. You know, so there's a lot of misconception about that. When you're building an addition, you can't just drop the materials off and start assembling your erector set. An addition is going to be condensed down to maybe 500 or 1,000 square feet, a much smaller piece of it. They get all the same setup and breakdown. But now I got to cart all those materials around into your backyard where we're going to build the addition. And I can't just back the concrete truck up and pour. We got to rent a pump and pump the concrete back there.
Right.
And so each phase of the work, the phase for the framer, it's smaller than your average framing job. They would rather frame apartment buildings, not a little addition. So you're going to pay a premium for the framer. The roofer, same thing. They want to be doing whole roofs, not just a little piece of the addition.
Right.
And then tying it into something that might have a hazard of leaking. So there's a lot of surcharges that come along the way. So reality today, when somebody wants to do an addition, they need to start their mental process at about 250 a square foot for just their shell. Yeah. And then bathrooms are going to add into that. Kitchens are going to add into that. Upgraded finishes are going to add into that number. Often people are spending $350 to $500 a square foot when they just want to get whatever they want to get.
And I mean, that honestly, I think that's everything tends to come down to dollars, right? Like, I mean, ultimately, I do marketing and everybody always asks me, what's the bottom line? What's the bottom line? But the reality is, whether it's construction, whether it is buying a new car, or whether it's marketing, it's a value proposition, right? So, like, understanding this is what I'm getting, and is this worth the price tag of what I'm doing? What you do is actually, you know, doing that type of addition. Like, listen, this is what the market bears. I mean, I get it 100%, right? So it's like anything else. If you buy something in bulk, you get it cheaper. If you advertise for longer, you get it cheaper. If you're building a whole house, the price per square foot might be cheaper. It's still, when you're doing a finite job and it's a shorter time, a shorter duration, a shorter amount of materials, but still requires the same effort, you pay that premium for that type of stuff. So that is a good thing for people to get their mindset around. And, you know, the other thing too is, from a business owner standpoint, I always tell this story. My brother owned a computer company, and he was kind of like the Geek Squad at Best Buy before the Geek Squad existed years and years ago. And we had a friend who was an HVAC guy, and my brother said, I'm stressed. I'm working 80 hours a week. And my friend who the plumber said to him, he said, well, like, what do you charge per hour? He goes, well, I charge $75 an hour. And my friend said to him, immediately tomorrow, send an email to every client and tell them your new rate is $150 an hour. And he said, are you kidding me? I'm going to lose half my clients. And he said, that's the idea. So you pay a premium. You keep the clients that are good clients, that you know are the clients that you're vital to their operation. You lose the ones that are kind of dillying around. And now you just freed up 40 hours in your week, and it's a quality of life standard. So understanding your value and what you're worth is vital to bringing that to the community. And if a business owner's listening to this, knowing what you're worth and what you're worth to the community is important. And Jason, listening to the way you're talking about how you operate your business, I clearly see the value added in what you do. What would be the one thing, listeners listening to this, if they're taking it away, that you want them to know about Avery Construction?
Sure. Avery Constructions is all about providing lots of information and providing it to you quickly. What I found is that some guys come out and say, oh, you know, I see what you need. Let me get back to you next week with an estimate. They really haven't collected enough information to give you anything accurate. So they tend to hem and haw and procrastinate. And it might be weeks later you're chasing them down for that estimate until you just say, hey, I'm ready to write you a check. They're not ready to give you any attention.
Right.
There's others who come in and say, oh, looks like, you know, 50,000. And they when you say, OK, please give that to me in writing, they give you a very vague description with a number that says 50,000. And you really don't know what exactly you're getting for your money. You think, you know, but that's where the problems happen down the road. You know, everybody's scared of the word change order. Is a change order justified because you actually added something to your scope?
Absolutely.
Or is the contractor calling it a change order because they didn't predict some of the expenses they were going to run into and now they want to pass them off to you?
Right.
So that's the real difference. So I started the beginning of the business with an itemization that I would break down for people. And that has been a work in progress for 12 and a half years. And that itemization has not only helped me scale my own business, but it's the number one tool that I sell to other general contractors when they come to me for coaching and consulting. First thing I say is, how do you price your jobs? If you have to go get every subcontractor to come out there and tell you what their fee is going to be before you can submit a price to your client, you're doing it all wrong. I know what my fees should be because I've done this over and over again, and I'm not going to let the subcontractor tell me anything different. So why can't I price their work along with mine, find out if the customer's interested, and then come and have subs re-verify my number after the fact to make sure there's nothing that would surprise us. So, you know, knowing your numbers and presenting that to a client in a way that is broken down, open book, you can, you know, go in there and say, I'll redline these five items and keep those, prioritize. It really makes the process more comfortable and manageable, so that as we go through the project, there's no discussions of, I thought we talked about that. I thought that was included. It's very specific. Here's what is included and here's what's not included. Here's the things we're going to let you provide so that you can save some money. We don't need to mark up every little part.
Right.
Of the piece. Go take advantage of my contractor discount over here at the local store. So we try to position people to feel comfortable. It's a very emotional experience when you're tearing somebody's home apart. And husbands and wives tend to get a little friction in the process when trying to decide how much you're going to spend, what colors are going to be, you know, where are we going to put it? So we try to just prepare people for the worst and then deliver something a little better than that. And try to come in a little ahead of schedule, try and come in a little under budget, try to, you know, make the process feel better so that at the end, they still like us. I want our clients to walk away from this as my friend, willing to come out of the boat with us for the day, you know, willing to refer us to their friends, their family, and their neighbors.
Well, I mean, that is honestly, like, summing all that up into one sentence is, you know, under-promising and over-delivering goes a long way with people who, exactly like you said, it's their home, they're emotional, they're not agreeing on stuff. And then, you know, I'm sure you get the good cop, bad cop, husband and wife teams where she's freaking out, you know, or he's freaking out, and then she's coming in and saying, no. I mean, you have that whole dynamic of what goes on because it is emotionally charged. So, you know, it sounds like to me that is, you know, that is a good mantra. That's one of the mantras that I try to live by when I operate my business with people is, I would rather tell you up front all the potential pitfalls. If I don't get the job from you because of that, then there's no harm, no foul. Rather than me try to square peg, round hole a situation, and then down the road, you're like, listen, you didn't tell me this was that or vice versa. I personally can't sleep with myself at night when I operate that way. So I just don't, because it makes me, my pillow test is, when I put my head on the pillow at night, if I know I'm treating people fairly and operating my business upstanding, sometimes it just doesn't work out. But the ones that do work out tend to work out for a longer period of time and become those referrals. So what is the best way if I'm listening to this? Number one, if I need some construction, or number two, if I'm looking to get some coaching, if I'm looking to get some guidance as a small business owner?
Sure. So in the construction world, you can visit the website, averyconstruction.com, and there's a residential half of the website and then a commercial half of the website. Commercial is a smaller portion of our business, but we do little boutique build outs for mom and pop operations.
For therapy people?
Yeah. We don't want to build the next three Starbucks stores, but if mom and pop are going to open a Java shop and they're going to pick all their own colors, that is absolutely the client that I like to serve. And then we end up doing their house as well in the big scheme of things. So, but Avery Construction has two different angles, lots of pictures in our gallery. Every page has a way where you can click to get a same day estimate. Just give us some information and one of our estimators will reach out to you very soon. If it's cabinetry, that is the main focus. We wholesale cabinetry to contractors like Avery Construction or interior designers. So if somebody already has their own contractor, they can still seek us out for any wood species, any color, any style. 6,000 square feet of wood shop tools based out of Clearwater, Florida. And so the sky's the limit. But that's designercabinetsllc.com. And if you're a contractor and you like to grow your business, I absolutely can help. I have resources. I have referrals to jobs that I'm not going to take on. And I can feed those people while mentoring them and supplying them with products and sharing, you know, the tools of the trade that I have. So that's construct-success.com.
And then the websites is the best way to get you to start. That's kind of the jumping off point.
Yeah, I like people to go click that button and see a little bit about us first.
Do
a little due diligence. And I don't spend a ton of time trying to convince somebody why they should hire us. And I want to work with the people who ideally were referred to me. 72% of our business is by referral. And people that know me know that we're going to treat them fairly. As you said, that spreadsheet is all about be fair to you and be fair to me. And we just want to, you know, make it cut and dry in a very, you know, clear cut project.
So, guys, if you're listening to this, you're looking to do a home remodel, maybe start a little mom and pop yoga studio or boutique or coffee shop, contact Avery Construction. There's multiple websites. We will include them in the podcast when we post it. Jason Avery, owner of Avery Construction, thank you so much for being on the Good Neighbor Podcast.
Absolute pleasure, Mike. Thanks for having me today.
Thanks for listening to the Good Neighbor Podcast. Passco. To nominate your favorite local businesses to be featured on the show, go to gnppassco.com. That's gnppassco.com or call 813-922-3610.